Penguin Random House Audio presents Wastelands, The True Story of Farm Country on Trial by Corbin Addison. Read for you by Rob Shapiro. For the neighbors, who taught me what it means to love one patch of earth and sky more than the world entire, and for the lawyers, who showed me the place where justice and mercy meet, and who, with passion and patience, brought about a miracle. There are no wastelands in our landscape quite like those we've created ourselves. Tim Winton, author of Island Home. I joke that, for the first part of my life, we killed people with nicotine, and for the second part, we're killing people with pathogens, odors, and polluted groundwater. Tom Butler, North Carolina hog farmer. Forward by John Grisham. I've sold a lot of books working David's corner, and I'm continually trolling for the next one-sided fight to send him into, the next Goliath begging for his comeuppance. There will never be a shortage of uneven conflicts, and they often make for great theater. Who doesn't love another version of the classic Bible story? It is so ingrained in the American psyche that we instinctively pull for the underdog, often with warts and all. In another career, I was a lawyer in a small office in a small town. My clients were working people who couldn't pay fees but wanted me to fix their legal problems anyway. On the other side of the street were corporations with plenty of money. Each day was another adventure as David and I squared off against the Philistines. Together, we sued insurance companies, banks, utilities, hospitals, manufacturers, railroads, pharmaceutical companies, property developers, and incompetent doctors. Winning was always difficult, but we got enough verdicts to stay in business. I cut my teeth punching up, and so I was naturally drawn to stories of other lawyers who took on the Goliaths. The first one I remember was A Civil Action, Jonathan Haar's classic nonfiction account of environmental pollution and litigation near Boston. Published in 1995, the book found a wide audience, won awards, and was adapted into a fine movie starring John Travolta and Robert Duvall. I've read it several times and obviously admire it, but it has one huge problem. Goliath wins. Wastelands is even better. It is the uplifting, round-by-round, true story of a bunch of rural plaintiffs with no money and seemingly little hope, and the lawyers who smelt injustice and went to war on their behalf. In terms of pure storytelling, this book has all of the crucial elements that writers of fiction constantly struggle to find. First, there is the tort, the wrongdoing, the pollution. There is the unregulated wholesale destruction of property values and quality of life by 2,000 commercial hog farms in eastern North Carolina. Second, there are the sympathetic victims, the 500 or so small landowners unlucky enough to have their lives ruined by massive hog farms next door. Third, there are delightfully evil bad guys. It is difficult to utter the phrase big pork without conjuring up all manner of images, none of them good. But big pork is king in hog country, and its advocates and apologists get their just rewards in this story. Goliath has never looked so bad. Fourth, there are the warriors who step into the ring and battle against heavy odds. For 30 years, Mona Lisa Wallace and her partner, Bill Graham, have fought to protect the poor, the injured, the mistreated. They have won big verdicts and even bigger settlements. Nothing, though, prepared them for their epic battle against Big Pork. Never in my most creative moments could I have assembled such a colorful and memorable cast of characters, and then blessed them with so riveting a set of facts, and then guided them through the ins and outs and uncertainties of high-stakes litigation. beautifully written, impeccably researched, and told with the air of suspense that few writers can handle. Wastelands is a story I wish I had written. March 3rd, 2021. Author's note. This book is based on hundreds of hours of in-depth conversations with over 60 people connected in one way or another to the nuisance lawsuits against Smithfield Foods. Most of my sources make appearances in the story, all under their real names, but a few agreed only to speak on background, and a handful of others I consulted on technical points of law and science. Along with immersing myself in the lives of the main players, I spent months on the road, traveling the byways of eastern North Carolina, visiting people in their homes, sitting on porches, touring hog farms, and learning the rural landscape. I went hiking in the wilderness and up in the air in small planes. I familiarized myself with the North Carolina General Assembly and witnessed key parts of the last federal trial in Raleigh. I traveled to Richmond, Virginia, and attended the appellate hearing before the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals. As time marched on, the people who animate this story became more than research subjects. They became friends. Yet they never asked more than this. Tell the truth. Let the world see what we saw. In addition to my original research, I leaned heavily on the voluminous public record in fleshing out the narrative. The court record from the state and federal cases, the legislative record from the North Carolina House and Senate and the U.S. Congress, and the media record, including countless articles in print and online, television interviews and event footage, documentaries and books. Beyond that, I relied on my years of experience as a litigation attorney, and before that as a law clerk in the federal courts, to interpret the legal nuances of the cases and the reactions of the individuals involved. All quotations in the story are derived from the memories of people who participated in or witnessed the relevant conversations, from prior media accounts in which the speaker is quoted, from video or audio recordings of the speaker in the public domain, and from transcripts of legal proceedings. Because most of us speak in a way that sounds better in person than it looks on the page, I applied a light editorial brush to spoken words for the benefit of concision and clarity. Also, in the courtroom scenes, I often condensed lengthy and labyrinthine exchanges between lawyers, witnesses, and judges to maintain narrative pacing and minimize legalese. I included as much dialogue in the story as I could, but I invented none of it. 6 months before the book was scheduled for publication, I reached out to Smithfield for an interview. I also approached two of its lawyers by email, both of whom make appearances in the story. One of the lawyers sent me a prompt and courteous reply saying he had passed my message along and requested permission to speak with me. From his silence, and that of the company itself, I assumed that permission was never granted. Thankfully, it wasn't difficult to tell Smithfield's side of the story. I relied upon the company's many press releases, the court testimony of its representatives, and the public statements of its allies. Although I wrote this book in the style of a novel, everything you are about to hear is true. Some stories really are wilder than the fancies of the imagination. This is one of them. Prologue. Veredictum. Come, my friends, 'tis not too late to seek a newer world. Alfred Lord Tennyson. Ulysses. U.S. District Court, Raleigh, North Carolina. August 3, 2018, 8:58 a.m. At first, word of it passes like the whisper of a surprise, from one ear to the next in private quarters on the 7th floor of the United States Courthouse in Raleigh, North Carolina. The jury foreman tells it to the bailiff, and the bailiff informs the law clerks, who advise Judge Britt. The judge then sends out emissaries to the legal teams assembled in conference rooms down the hall. The lawyers don't understand the significance of the summons until they assemble in the courtroom. After the judge speaks, it's quiet enough in the vaulted space.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?